What's up, Waves? Today's episode is brought to you by State Bags. State Bags makes beautiful, well-made, cool products. For every State Bag purchase, State Bags hand delivers a backpack packed with essentials for American children in need. State Bags is offering our listeners 15% off using the code POD at statebags.com. That is P-O-D, POD, for 15% off your next purchase at State Bags. State Bags, they've got your back.
Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to Weebcast, and thank you, Bo, for doing today's sponsor on this episode, State Bags, and thank you, everybody, for tuning into this episode, and thank you for supporting some of the most recent episodes here on the podcast, especially the episode I did with the Strictly Series Podcast Network, my friends over there, Courtney and Carl, two lovely people. You guys need, like I said, keep checking them out. Keep checking their pod. Keep checking the show. Check out the website at the strictlyseries.com. But thank you for the support on that episode. I hope you guys. It seems like you guys really liked the episode. Judging from it, so I'm happy for that. Because I really enjoyed recording that episode and putting that out there for you guys. And like you can see on today's episode, I'm going to be talking a little bit more into the anime industry, specifically on just one studio, and that's going to be Studio MAPPA, and how 2020 has really been their year, to be honest. We're going to talk about their rise, their beginnings, their shortcomings, and all that good and juicy stuff. But before we get into all that, I want to let you guys know that you can support Weebcast and make it even better by jumping on and becoming an all-access Weeb by pledging to Patreon. And it's real easy. This is all you have to do. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/Weebcast Show. There's three pledging options. I got a dollar a month, a $2 a month one, and a $3 a month one, all with a lot of perks. The $1 a month one, you get episodes days early, you get episodes with no ads, and then you also get bonus content without ads as well. The $2 option, you get all that and even more. You get to choose a topic, you can jump on live shows with me, you get first dibs on if you want to be a guest and run episodes with me, all kinds of good stuff. And with the $2 one, you get even more bonus shows that include that will have shows that Bo, my co-host, will produce herself. We've already got ideas. We've already got some of it's already been recorded. All we have to do is just wait for some people maybe to get into that second tier of the $2 a month tier, and then we'll start putting those out there for you guys as well. And the $3 a month, you know what? I don't want to get, look, a lot of juicy stuff. AMAs, behind the scenes content. And so much more. And that's just for $3. But like I said, three tiers. We got a $1, got a $2 one, and a $3 one. All chock full with stuff that you would like. And I already got content already on the Patreon to get you guys started. So hop on to patreon.com/Weebcast Show and pledge to the Patreon and become closer to your favorite anime and manga show on the internet, Weebcast. But yeah, also follow the Instagram at WeebcastTV and follow my Twitter at BasedSenpai. But I shouldn't waste any more time. And I kind of want to get into today's topic. And that is pretty much the rapid success and of MAPPA, of Studio MAPPA. It's a meteoric rise seen with success after success after success. I mean, when I say that, I shouldn't say that. It's because there are some pitfalls. There are some dips in their steady climb. But we'll get to that. But let's start in the beginning. Let's go back to 2011. That is when Studio MAPPA opened. And in the past 9 years, Studio MAPPA has become a very, very popular studio amongst anime fans for their attention to detail and the stories they produce. Studio MAPPA was led by Masao Murayama, the co-founder and the producer of Studio Madhouse, before he left in 2016 to create Studio M2. Needless to say, MAPPA took off running. And Studio Madhouse, you should be pretty familiar with Madhouse. I mean, Madhouse have done incredible, has produced incredible shows over the years. One of my favorite underrated Studio Madhouse production was the Toriko OVA they did years ago. I want to say maybe 2014, maybe it might be older than that. They've done notable animes, but this one was different because Toei was doing Toriko, the TV series. But Studio Madhouse did one of the OVA movies, and I've never thought Toriko looks cool. Toriko, if you ever read the manga, Toriko is a badass hunter, chef. I mean, he's not really a chef, but he can cook a little bit. But you know, he gathers the ingredients so expert chefs can cook them. But he's a macho badass. He's a really typical shonen hero, something of a time before the typical our shonen heroes we're kind of seeing today. But he never looked so goddamn good with Madhouse animating his fork, his knife, his nail gun punches. It was ridiculous. If you want to see something underrated done by Madhouse, check out that Toriko or OVA. It won't be too hard to search up. But I think you can actually find it on YouTube at this point. Like it's that old. But back to Studio MAPPA. They currently have about 25 or 27 aired shows and 2 films actually under the belt, and some of these works include Terror and Resonance, Rage of Bahamut, Genesis and Virgin Soul, Hajime no Ippo Rising, Kakuragiri, Dorodoro, and the film This Corner of the World, and they have many more works to air and a few that are currently in production right now. But I wanted to start in the beginning because we're going to start with their debut. Sorry if I could speak. And that's Kids on the Slope. MAPPA's first entry, Kids on the Slope, came out in 2012 and was co-produced with Tezuka Productions. And the series is set in 1966. And it follows a person named Karuya Nishimi, a classical pianist who moves to Kyushu, who meets Sentaro Kawaguchi, who's a big-hearted drummer and is usually mistaken as like a common thug due to his stature and his demeanor and the look of his face. But Sentaro and Karu become an unlikely friendship, and it stems from Sentaro introducing Karu to jazz music. And the series kind of documents their friendship, their life together, and the effects of jazz music that it has on the both of them. The closest thing I can compare it to is Your Lie in April. But the Kids on the Slope offers a way more realistic life in Japan during the 60s. And the show doesn't feel like a typical anime, really. It really feels like watching a drama due to its deep roots in reality. Just how realistic the characters are. It's almost as if they were based on, you know, actual people. And as a show that focuses on music, the musical sections of the show make, you know, really take the limelight. And MAPPA's attention to detail here, when it comes to the animation, is really apparent in the scenes that have the characters playing with their instruments. You know, the fluidity of the characters and the instruments, movement shows that MAPPA doesn't really mess around when it comes to animating their sequences. So now, when I was writing this part, because I didn't know, because this is going to change, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit, probably a little bit later on, but I'll say this for now. Because I think technically this is still true for now. This keywords, guys. Make sure you guys are, for your Weebcast historians, that you guys make sure that I'm saying that for now. They're most famous for, the anime they're most famous for is Yuri on Ice. Now, this is a show that needs very little introduction, as it was one of the most popular anime of 2016, and the show follows Japanese skater Yuri Katsuki. After he takes a break from his skating career in order to sort himself out, you know, by going back home. And one day, he perfectly recreates a performance by his idol Victor Nikiforov. I don't know how to say his last name. I'll just say Victor. And Victor sees this and rushes to Japan to become Yuri's coach for the next season. And throughout the series, you know, the relationship between Yuri and Victor changes from idol to admirer, coach to student, and finally romantic partners in an organic way. And the show is really one of the few shows that depict a LGBTQ plus relationship respectively and in a realistic way. And the show did draw some criticism for not explicitly stating their relationship, but fans of the series argue that they didn't really need to state it, since it was pretty extremely obvious. But more importantly, the show did introduce a legion of fans into the ice skating world, and which is a big thing. The team behind the show, you know, stated that they went to great lengths to depict the ice skating world, and even went as far as to travel and watch skating competitions. There were some people that did an interview with the creator Sayo Yamamoto, and I gotta see if I can find that interview. I'll post it on Twitter if I can find it. But I remember reading this interview where these people sat down and spoke with Sayo Yamamoto about the work that went into to do justice in the skating world. And which is really important, because for a big fan who's a big fan of Slam Dunk, who I think is not only one of the greatest sports manga of all time, but I think it's up there as one of the greatest just stories in Japanese comics, that it introduces people into a world of a sport that they probably previously have not been accustomed to. And like I said, like Slam Dunk, and I've said it on through the entire course of the show, we have what, 40, 41 some episodes out on Weebcast. But my very first episode was on sports and manga, and I talk all about that, about Slam Dunk and its influence, and why it's such an important manga in Japanese culture. So check that out. It's the very first episode of Weebcast Sports and Manga. But like many sports anime, the series introduced legion fans to the ice skating world, and who became, you know, quickly became fans of actual skaters. And some of these skaters include Japanese skater Yuzuru Hanyu, Russian skater Evgenia Medenva, and the late Kazakhstani skater Dennis Ten. And many of these skaters have also recreated scenes from the anime and raved about how amazing it was to see their sport immortalized through the show. And MAPPA also stated that a prequel film was in the works. Yuri on Ice Adolescence was first announced in 2018 with a 2019 release, but the film's been delayed with no confirmed release date at the moment. And that was delayed before COVID in 2020. And with this year, I don't know. I'm not sure how production is going, or is the movie even done yet? But we'll see. What we do know, though, is that the film was meant to be a prequel to the events of the anime. So there's some good news for Yuri on Ice fans right there. But now to a different work. Maybe not their most popular work they've done, but a very, very, very one of their other popular works, but with a little different angle, different take, you know. Banana Fish. This 2018 Was it 2018? I think it was 2018. This 2018 show isn't for the faint of heart, because as it deals with sexual violence, regular violence, drugs, and everything in between. But it's based on the 1985 to the started in, I think the manga started in 1985 and then ended, I think, around 1994. Of the same name, the manga name, same Banana Fish. And MAPPA revisited this series to commemorate its 30th anniversary. And the show depicts the budding relationship between a teenage New York gang leader, Ash Lynx, and the Japanese photographer assistant, Eiji Okamoto. And the manga was extremely popular with females and males when it came out. And it influenced, and it really was one of the more influencing boys' love genre to its depiction of Ash and Eiji's relationship, especially at that time, in the late 80s, early 90s. Because really throughout the series, Ash is constantly sexually assaulted by his guardian, and as a result of his abuse, has really never known what love really is. And so this is where Eiji really comes into the play here. And he shows what it means to be really loved. And the series mainly focuses on the ordeals the duo has to go through because of Ash's abuser and how their love grows during the course of the series. Instead of relying on typical fan service tropes. And MAPPA took the show and reworked it to match with the present time New York, to the point where the staff members went to New York to do research for the show. You should definitely check out some, because I think staff members of MAPPA have talked about it publicly, I believe, about the work they had to go through and the production they went through on Banana Fish. And they've talked about a little bit about how they were able to bring the story from the late 80s to early 90s to the, 2010s of 2018, for a modern audience. Now, for a show that really just comes out of nowhere, punch from your blind spot, a ball shot out into left field in baseball, and that's one of my faves. I guess you can call it almost a guilty pleasure. And that's Zombieland Saga. By the end of 2018, a lot of people had enough of the half-baked idol shows. And if you're speaking to a person like me, who's never really on that bandwagon or train, I was done with it long before that. But I digress. But still, no one was quite ready, because I know I wasn't, was for what Zombieland Saga would bring to audiences. The Zombieland Saga is one of the most recent idol shows that had audience invested in the group, Friend Chocho, and its undead members. While each episode followed a similar idol backstory, the show took advantage of having zombies as the main focus of the show and wasted no time in making comedic gold by taking advantages of having an undead cast. And MAPPA did something that they got praise from a worldwide audience. They introduced a transgender character. And while this gained some controversy in a few select spots, the audience loved the show for the inclusion of the character for the most part. Lily and her insertion in her identity, as well as the character's reaction to a discovering she was born male. Lily soon became the talk of the internet and gave many transgender people a character that they could really connect with. And this cemented, really, I think this is one of the shows, really cemented MAPPA's representation as one of the most LGBTQ-friendly studios, and they repeatedly handled the characters in a respectful manner. Like I was talking with Yuri and Ice. Now, their most recent the most recently one that has ended, I guess, for now. Because I'm going to talk about another one. Another one that's a little more recent, and a little one that everyone's watching worldwide. one of their more recent ones is Doro Hedoro. This 2020 show follows Kaimon and his journey to finding the sorcerer responsible for turning his head into a reptile and erasing his memory. Good, starting off strong, aren't we, right? And he travels around this with his friend, Nikaido, assaulting sorcerers, and the duo eventually gets the attention of a powerful sorcerer, N. And N then sends his cleaners to eradicate Kaimon and starts this really big, elaborate cat and mouse game between N and Kaimon. And for this show, MAPPA uses 2D and 3D animation. And the visuals were honestly striking. And this has come from someone who typically despises, when I mean despises 3D animation. Really, and especially 2D animation mixed with 3D animation. And I say that because it's never used quite right. And it's never used to enhance a show. It's just kind of used to fill in gaps of story or characters or design, and uses it kind of as like a mask or a shield to like block from people not noticing the pitfalls of the show. But in reality, it really just enhances them. But I will say though, while some scenes in the show, in Doro Hedoro, the 3D animation does make them seem a little bit choppy, but the studio kind of really works around it to make it look as best as possible. And they do really mix with the 2D, applying the 2D animation pretty well as well. However, it's still pretty choppy, and a lot of scenes do kind of lose some of their impact. But the show itself is still interesting. I think the story carries it, and the characters carry the show strong enough, even with some of the choppy scenes. And it's still worth the watch. I mean, the show launched on Netflix this summer, I believe. This summer, May 28th. So you guys check that out on Netflix. But what's next for Studio MAPPA? So many great shows, so many successes. What's next? Well, MAPPA already has a pretty good list of anime ready for release. And most of these shows have been delayed, but you know, they're ready to go. And some of these shows shows include the MAPPA Originals, Listeners, The God of High School, which is based on a webtoon of the same name. We got Jujutsu Kaisen, Mr. Love, Queen's Choice, was based on a Chinese mogul dating sim. And then finally, we got the final season of Attack on Titan, which is going to be incredible. And while the news of the change shocked the fans because people were originally held by Wit Studio, it's still a welcome change. And as fans know that MAPPA will most definitely do the final season some justice there. Now, coming up next, I'm going to be talking about one of those shows, Jujutsu Kaisen, a little more closely with Studio MAPPA. I'm going to be talking about that. I'm going to talk about MAPPA and Jujutsu Kaisen. I'm going to be talking about how they adapt manga. Definitely going to have to talk about some places where they kind of stumbled, where Studio MAPPA stumbled over their course of history. Their wins and losses, and some more, and so much more. So, right after the ad break, I'm going to see you on the side, and we're going to talk a little bit of Studio MAPPA with actually there with Jujutsu Kaisen. But we have to talk about somewhere where they took some L's. It's not many, but it is what it is. And every studio has its weakness, and we're going to go over Studio MAPPA's weakness right after this. I'll see you guys on the other side. Hey, yo, what's up? Welcome back. So, you guys, thank you for sticking around. I really do appreciate it. Like I said, we're going to be finishing up on some MAPPA stuff, because I want to talk about Jujutsu Kaisen and why it's saying, and how MAPPA's handling it. It's really making MAPPA Studios the best, most, I guess, the most prolific studio of 2020. What does that mean? I wonder what that means, you know? I mean, this is the year of COVID, right? The year of the pandemic. And people, and for my basketball, a few basketball people that listen to the show, which, you know, may be a really small subsection, so I may lose a lot of you guys saying this, but a lot of people were wondering, whoever won the NBA Finals for this year, would it, you know, how much would that championship be worth? How much is it, you know, because it's the year people sat out because of COVID. It was done differently than in most playoffs. Previously, obviously, it had to be done differently. It was played in a bubble, in the NBA bubble down in Florida. So many different circumstances were playing into it, which probably changes the variability of who would be the better team, have the best mindset, and all that stuff. So I wonder what that means for, I don't know, I'm genuinely asking. You know, I think MAPPA has been one of the better studios of 2020, and then when I thought about it when doing this episode, I'm like, what does that mean, though, really? You know, what does that actually mean? But then maybe that's another point. That's another thing. Maybe an end of the year episode, we'll probably do something around that. But in the 8-9 years, MAPPA has emerged as one of the most recognizable studios in anime, in the anime world, and for good reason. From its early collaborations with Shinichiro Watanabe, to the global phenomenon as Yuri on Ice, to the well-received classic manga adaptations as Dororo and Banana Fish, MAPPA has established itself as the studio that can, you know, competently handle any genre. And 2020 has been MAPPA's most prolific year yet, as I previously stated. The studio has produced 8 series in total this year. I think 8 or 9, actually. 3 of which are part of the current fall season and the upcoming Attack on Titan final season. And his journey through this difficult year has not been the smoothest all the way. But ultimately, the studio highs exceed its lows in 2020. MAPPA is really one of the champions of manga adaptations. Truly. Many of the best MAPPA productions have been manga adaptations, and this year is no exception. MAPPA has adapted the cult classic Dorohedoro this past winter. And the anime perfectly captures the quirky yet gory tone of the original manga, and impressively kind of recreating the mangaka Kyu Hayashida's chaotic yet really meticulous art style. And it has some of the highest quality CG animation in all of anime, aside from maybe Orange's production, like Beastars, Land of the Lustrous. Even its incredibly trippy opening and ending served as a delightful blast of a silly fun, you know, at a time where most people desperately needed some silly and fun entertainment. MAPPA's big show of the summer was the popular webtoon adaptation of The God of High School. And the series ultimately received mixed reviews, which I want to do a review of God of High School, now to think about it. While I'm talking about it on that subject, I'm getting a little distracted here, but this is what we do here at Weebcast. But I have some written up about what my thoughts about God of High School, and I've kind of sprinkled some of it through some episodes over the summer and into the fall, but I never explicitly spent some time and talked about it, mainly because I didn't think it was all that worth it. But increasingly, I'm starting to see that it might be worth to talk about it a little bit more, because I just get it's literally one of my favorite webtoons. Really, it's one of my favorite webtoons. I love it. It's cheesy, great action hero fighting stuff webtoon. I love every bit of it. Love the art. But the anime, God. The fighting scenes, excellent. The story, the story was never it, Lord of the Rings, you know, One Piece, Naruto, Tower of God, like story building kind of thing. It was never meant to be that type of webtoon, but the way MAPPA has did its pacing, the incomplete world building, things that they left out, narrative issues. It just kind of highlighted a lot of, if it's lack of story. And it was really trying to, really just trying to move from fight to fight as quick as possible. So they didn't expose some of the lack of the narrative, of any narrative of any kind. But the action animation was outstanding. So that was one of the real good, that was one of the only bright spots in it, and it was a clear display of the studio's talent. But luckily, MAPPA's latest manga adaptation, Jujutsu Kaisen, has all the elements that make a great anime. It perfectly combines an intense story, likable characters, and spectacular visuals. The three things is one of my, it's really the three cornerstones I look for in any anime. It could be any anime, gag anime, serious anime, action, sci-fi, romance, shoujo, anything. But those three things for me, you're going to learn something here from Weebcast right here. Listen up. There's three things that you should look into an anime if you want to seriously like, if you seriously think it's good. At least it has a good story. You know, I use the word intense, but it doesn't have to be an intense story. It just has to be a thriving story. Likeable characters and spectacular visuals. Those are three important things. And it's already considered one of the top contenders of the anime of the year, which we're going to talk about that because I don't know when Crunchyroll is going to be doing their anime awards. I'm assuming it's coming up. I really don't pay attention. I usually don't pay attention to a lot of these anime awards done by these websites and blogs and all that stuff. But I was thinking about it. And I was thinking about Weebcast. I think I'm going to do my own end of the anime awards. I think I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right. I'm going to do it better than these other. I'm going to do it better than Crunchyroll. I'm going to do it better than Funimation. I don't know if Funimation does awards. I'll do it better than Reddit. And I love Reddit. But maybe, well, let's think about that. Get me. We only got very little time left in 2020. But let's finish it off. Let's finish this whacked out year right with a Weebcast Anime of the Year award show. I'll have guests. I can have people on. We can talk about it. You know what? Let's do that. If I can set it up, I'll definitely do it. If I can do it. It may not be in December. It might be in January. But I'm going to try to put that together. But moving on. Episode 7 of the... I think episode 7 was the latest episode, I believe. At least the time of this recording, I'm saying. Episode 7 trended globally as the most powerful character. Gojo Satoru flexed his sorcery skills, and while MAPPA showed off its animation skills in surpassing a lot of people's expectations. And MAPPA's success with Jujutsu Kaisen may have put some, you know, anxious Attack on Titan fans' hearts at easier, as they eagerly await the final season of Attack on Titan. The trailers put out by MAPPA has already looked good as those from the anime's previous animation studio, WIT. Now, like I said before the break, you know, every animation studio I feel like has a weakness, you know. And I think Studio MAPPA's weakness is that they have stumbled with some original anime. 2020 has not been MAPPA's year when it comes to original animation. You know, while the studio had past successes with original stories, especially with Urine Ice, Zombieland Saga, and last year's, Sadarazami, this year's two big MAPPA originals, Listeners and the Gymnastic Samurai, were both, the better say, just underwhelming. Unless they weren't particularly bad, I feel like they were just weaker than what people expected, and it, you know, we just expected a little bit more, probably. But spring season of 2020, Listeners had the ambitious goal of combining mecha with rock music, and you're probably thinking like, Chris, like, see, that sounds a pretty damn good mix. What do you mean? And the story takes place in a world where music does not exist. And the protagonists have to drive giant mechas to fight monsters called Earless. You know, however, this intriguing premise and the well-done animation are really ultimately ruined by a cliched story and just really flat, boring characters. Though rock fans may appreciate the references hidden throughout the anime, you know, but references alone doesn't really make a good anime. So, in such excess, they make the story feel too self-indulgent. The other letdown, was the Gymnastic Samurai, produced simultaneously with Jujutsu Kaisen, has the opposite problem of the listeners. This series has had a solid, if, you know, offbeat story, has fun characters, but the animation doesn't generally execute the story as well as it could. Conceptually, the anime seems to want to replicate the success of Yuri on Ice, but with MAPPA having so much shows in production at the same simultaneously, it feels like this series has gotten the short end of the stick visually. Unfortunately, the animation quality has improved in recent episodes. So here's, you know, I'm just, you know, as I raise my cup of water as, you know, as a toast and for hoping it's continued positive trend. Because it has not started out great. But all in all, those were just two L's. You know what I'm saying? MAPPA certainly has more wins than losses here. The rest of MAPPA's 2020 lineup can only be described as forgettable. Winters, Uchichama, it's adorable anime, but and Series MAPPA co-produced it with Lapin Track, I believe. And it's based on the character franchise, Sony Creative Products, and designed to sell merchandise, you know. And this series could have been made by literally any other studio, but and just be successful at selling products. But though, it's wild to think that this and Doro Hedoro were produced at the same time by the same studio. And if you think I sound shocked, because I am, you guys really need to look at this Uchitama show. I watched it. I think I watched it. And I think I talked about it in one of the episodes very briefly. To think that that show and Doro Hedoro was being produced at by the same studio at the same time, it's incredible. God, that staff is talented. So talented. And it's weird to think that they were doing such a weird, cutesy dog animal hybrid kind of show while doing this ultimate artsy gory show like Doro Hedoro. But another show that I think I briefly referenced was My Glove Queen's Choice, and that was from the summer, and that represents a kind of a slight departure from MAPPA's usual fare. You know, it's an adaptation of a popular otome game. I think it's from a dating sim game in China. And this was MAPPA's first Ultima series. And the series features a very complex world with superpowers and an evil cult. Arguably, it's a little too complex for its own good. But, you know, having to constantly juggle between four male leads presents a challenge for any real sense of coherent storytelling, especially given the overly complicated backstories. But like, I'm not going to go into that show too much, but overall, MAPPA has produced more high quality anime in a troublesome year than many studios have in a normal year. And even if it's least successful, listeners, still has an above average animation and pretty good music. Its dominion over the fall season, with the outstanding Jujutsu Kaisen, is undeniable. And MAPPA has become a powerhouse in the anime industry, achieving a balance between quality and quantity few other studios has ever rarely ever achieved. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Weebcast, the number one anime and MAPPA show on the internet. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Hope you learned a few things about Studio MAPPA and why they have dominated the year of 2020. And hope it gives you some excitement to watch more Jujutsu Kaisen, because that show is great. And hope it gets you ready for the final season of Attack on Titan, because I think they're going to absolutely kill it. Was that December 7th of this year? December 7th, right? So, it's going to be great. It's going to be crazy. I was going to say, since we're at the end of the show, maybe we could do some housekeeping. Right next week, the week after next Friday. Next episode, I will have a Burn the Witch review. Yes, finally. It's going to be a little... It's a few weeks late. It's gonna, by the time that comes out, it's going to be over a month since Burn the Witch has ended with the three-part movie and then the manga. I'm going to focus a little bit on the anime, though. On the anime in that review, but... Let's just say I'm really excited for it. Mainly because I love it talking about anything dealing with Kubo. I love Kubo. Is he like my favorite mangaka? I don't know. Maybe not, but I just love talking about the man Kubo. Such an interesting character. He creates even just as much as interesting characters and interesting world. And that's what I'm going to talk about in that Burn the Witch review for next episode. Talking about its world building, its magic, its connection to the Bleach universe, and all that good stuff. And we'll talk about the characters as well. Probably even talk about how I think it's gonna ride the momentum of a dual protagonist manga anime formula that's only recently now being used again. We're seeing a wave of shows and manga now doing that, like. The more recent one I can remember that's done it really well, and I think was Beastars. Beastars, it didn't start out as. I think when most people read Beastars, they don't think of it as of having a dual protagonist story, but it really does. It doesn't really start until after that very first little arc with Legacy and Bill. The Bengal Tiger and their little fight at the play. But after that, it's been really nothing, but it's really been the Louis and Legacy show or manga for up from that point on to the very end. And it builds and it just keeps building and building stronger and stronger as the arcs continue until we get to the last arc with Melon and all that stuff. But you know, like I said, I'm gonna talk more about that when I talk about Burn the Witch. And review it a little much more in depth. Right now I'm just kind of just some garbage time here at the end of the show, but so I got that coming up. So next week got the Burn the Witch, and then the week after that, because we'll probably be into December at that point. I think we'll be into December at that point. I gotta check actually. Yeah, because so next week I'll have the Burn the Witch. And then the week after, we'll already be in the first week of December. So, I'll probably, and that'll be some filler. I mean, not filler, but it'll be a week to have a free, because there's really nothing going on that month. That first week, I mean, obviously the Attack on Titan, I definitely want to do a review of that first episode with the animation, how they adapted and all that good stuff. So, that'll probably be the week after. But that first week in December, I'm doing a little fun thing. I'm going to be talking about spinoffs. I feel like it's been the year of spinoffs, and 2021 will continue that, but it's been such a revival for shows coming back and having spinoffs or just coming back, and I want to do an episode just on my favorite spinoffs of all time, or not of all time, but maybe I should just talk about the ones that have been done really, really well. I think I'll start there first, but so that's what we're kind of coming up here up on WeCast. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for allowing my voice into your ears, into your homes. This has been C-Dub, a.k.a. Marie, a.k.a. The Independent Variable, a.k.a. I've been thirsty for some coffee. And this has been Weep Guys. But I'm out of 3000. I hope you guys have a lovely day. And a lovely weekend, actually. See ya.